Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharakana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Today, we're joined by our guests, Robert and Larry Cox. Robert Cox is the Vice President of the Mountain View Historical Association of Mountain View, California. He writes two columns for the association newsletter, Finding Your Family History, which provides general genealogical advice, and Mountain View Family History Fun Facts, which highlights interesting family history discoveries of Mountain View's leading citizens. He first studied genealogy in Dallas, Texas in 1990. Since then, he has constructed a family tree with over 53,000 entries, all of which are featured on the WikiTree genealogy website, wikitree.com. His WikiTree profiles include those of his first cousin, Larry Cox, who is also a guest on this show, and distant relative, Sharakana Feliciano, that's me, the show co-host. During the day, Robert is a software project lead at Intel Corporation in Santa Clara, California. He holds a PhD in systems engineering from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. He is also active in the local Mountain View political scene.
Larry Cox spent nearly 20 years in leadership positions as Amnesty International, beginning in 1976 at Amnesty International USA, where he served as its first press officer, communications director, deputy executive director, and coordinated its program to abolish the death penalty. Cox was the executive director of the Rainforest Foundation, an international organization working with indigenous peoples in the Brazilian Amazon to protect their rights and environment. He served 11 years as senior program officer for human rights at the Ford Foundation. A graduate of Union Theological Seminary, he also co-founded and co-directed Kairos, the Center on Religions, Rights, and Social Justice. He currently lives with his wife, Nicole, in Tivoli, New York, where he serves on the steering committee of Hudson Valley Strong Indivisible, working on political and social justice campaigns. Spurred on by his cousin, Robert, and a surprising discovery about their great-grandfather, he has become passionate about genealogy. Welcome to Speak On It, Larry and Robert Cox.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Thank you so much. So we're going to go ahead and get started, and I'd like to ask each of you, how did you begin your genealogy research journey? And Larry, we'll start with you.
For me, it's been a pretty short journey because for most of my now long life, I had really no desire at all to research my family history. And here's why. I came of age in the 1960s. And for reasons having to do mainly with my mother and my religious faith, I was greatly inspired and shaped by Martin Luther King Jr., and I became an active supporter of the civil rights movement. Now, I love my family, but I was very aware that with the exception of my mother and my brothers, there were many relatives of mine, including my father, who had very different and to me, frankly, often very disturbing beliefs and attitudes on race that clashed with mine. But rather than fight over this with people I loved, I decided to just move on and become involved in the larger fights that were going on beyond my family out in the country for equality, justice, and peace in the 60s. And after that, I saw no reason for, I had no interest in sort of looking backwards at my family's ancestors. In fact, I was sure that I would, if I got to know about them, I would strongly disapprove and learn little from them, sort of the arrogance of youth. But fortunately for me, there was one member of my extended family, my cousin Robert, who was interested. He was very interested in our ancestors, and he found, after, as he will explain, after years of research, information that was not only hard for me to believe, truly incredible for me to believe, but that shook up everything I thought I knew about my family and about the history that they were a part of. And it's his research that put me on the journey, which has already led to meeting a large number of wonderful and diverse relatives that I never even knew I had, including one who's on this podcast. It also led me to discover a number of genealogical mysteries that I'm now, thanks to Robert, obsessed with solving. So I'm eager to have Robert explain why he started the research that's been so life-changing for me.
Well, before Robert starts, I just want to say something. You said you are obsessed with it. Chericon and I like to call it being chosen to do the work that we're doing. And then there's that pull that just speaks to us, that calls us to do it. So I congratulate you, and I'm very proud of the work that you're doing just on based on what I've heard so far. Robert?
So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of an interesting thing for me to just get involved in after I had moved to Texas. I had grown up all my life in a small town called Elyria, and it was a town that our grandfather, Larry and I, had moved in the early 1920s because my dad's dad and Larry's dad's dad was offered a raise. He worked in a foundry from 20 cents an hour to 25 cents an hour. This was such a huge amount of money. They couldn't pass up the opportunity, so they left Cleveland and went there. But, you know, I mean, I ended up going to school in Cleveland in Case Western Reserve. After school, I was looking around for new job opportunities. I landed in Dallas. I didn't know anybody, but Dallas had like one of the top 15 genealogical libraries in the United States at that time.
Oh, wow.
And I was a bored young single person with nothing to do on Saturdays. And so I said, you know, I remember Larry's dad's second wife telling me that she had papers that showed that our great-grandfather was from Texas. And I said, well, okay, that's something I can do on Saturdays. So I started going to the library every time. And the first thing I found was that I was surprised that he had been married twice and that our great-grandmother was his second wife. But, you know, later after having exhausted what I could find in Texas, you know, I went back to Cleveland, and I used, because our family was from Cleveland, you know, around 1900, and started looking through the records there. And I noticed something. You know, first thing I noticed was that our great-grandparents were married by a Black minister. And then, you know, as I was looking around a little bit later, I found the first record where, you know, an 1860 census, they're listed there. And my eyes just glanced over on the side of the census page. And here's this letter M that I'd never noticed before. And, you know, and it's like, I look down at the index and it says, you know, this stands for mulatto. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, this is something that I'd never heard of before. In our family, nobody had ever mentioned, okay, that we were a mixed race family. So anyway, I mean, you know, that was probably the biggest surprise of my young life. And, you know, I said, well, I'm going to find out more about this. And, you know, luckily enough, that genealogy library had a book on Black genealogy. I picked it up and started reading it and tried to look into and find as much as I could. But at that time, this was before the internet and everything, there wasn't a lot that you could do. And so I think, you know, my work on this stuff lapsed for up until about maybe 8 years ago. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I noticed that there's a lot of genealogy stuff that's available on the internet. And what was absolutely amazing to me was that how quickly I could grow my family tree. I mean, you know, like I could grow 20, 25 people a day. When, you know, like 20 years earlier, those 25 people would take a decade. And so then there was a chance to start learning more. And after that, I ended up taking an ancestry test from Ancestry DNA. And this connected to people who were our great grandfather. His name was Perry Cox, sometimes called Commodore Perry Cox. He wasn't actually in the military, but not in the Navy. but in any case, I'll just say Perry to make it easier. But he had a younger brother, Fred, who had 15 children that I had learned about. And then I was able to start connecting up with some of them through Ancestry. And, you know, he had many more descendants than on our branch of the tree. And, you know, I mean, I started connecting with people in Ancestry. I started meeting some of them. I went to a family reunion in Los Angeles. And then, you know, outside of that, I wanted to go back further. And so I started, you know, using the DNA information to try to connect me up to other branches of the Cox family that might be related to ours. And that's how I found the branch that relates me back to Chiricana's family. There was a young Mr. Becton who was a DNA match to me, and he was also a DNA match to several of Perry's descendants, several of Fred's descendants, and then also matched up to another branch that I found, a woman named Sarah Catherine Cox Taylor. So I went and I traced his ancestry back to his third great grandparents, who were William Bryant Becton and Elsie Cox Becton. And
my people.
That's your people. And the amazing thing was, is that, you know, this to me was a great find, because in the 1860 census, our great grandfather and his brothers aren't living with their parents. They're living with a couple named Daniel Skeen and his wife, Charlotte Skeen. And those two actually came from Lenoir County, North Carolina. And Elsie Cox Becton also came from Lenoir County. And so, you know, here I finally had the first solid evidence that was putting our family, our genetic family, back in Lenoir County. So that's a start.
Okay. Well, you covered quite a lot of ground. First off, I want to say when you said
I know you're going to beat me to it. I know you're going to be. I was like, who's going to do it first? But I will sit here and
mean somebody else knows Chiricana. The Valyria.
It's funny. I had to squeal because we actually had a guest last year. Was it? I think it was last year. Ethan West, and he is from Valyria, Ohio. I had never heard of Valyria before. He was our guest. He is actually a cousin of Cheryl Wills from New York One. And his line traces back to Tennessee, but he's been doing a lot of work, really great project, highlighting Black Ohioans of Elyria and just really putting them on the map. I never knew about the town until Ethan West came, and now you mentioned Elyria. So
okay,
I had to make a note of that.
Part two is that Ethan actually, his family, originates out of North Carolina. And I'm doing everything possible not to minimize here and go on to Ancestry, because I also have Cox coming out of that same area. And Chiricana and I share a little bit of DNA. So who knows, but that's normally for, you know, after the show. Okay.
Wow. Just mind-blowing information after mind-blowing information. Okay. So I want to just, let me set the scene a little bit. This is a little bit different from our usual shows, and that we don't typically know that we're connected to people, you know, before. I think it happened one other time, but this one is pretty interesting. I have to tell you, Robert, when you first reached out to me and I saw the last name Cox, and, you know, we'll kind of get into the conversation about race and so forth, I was like, okay, I see this white man reaching out, his last name's Cox. I assume that perhaps you were a descendant of the enslaved and that you were reaching out to say, hey, like, I have some information, you know, I want to share. And, you know, it really was. And that wasn't it at all. Mm-hmm. You're reaching out to tell me, like, hey, I found out that I have, you know, mixed race ancestry coming from the Cox line. And it looks like, you know, we're related somehow. And so it really was like my assumptions got challenged. And, you know, it just, the story unfolded from there. So just for clarity, yes, our line is the Cox line out of North Carolina. This is Lenoir County. And so we are Elsie Cox and William Bryant Becton Those would have been my third great grandparents, I believe. And so we're trying to figure out how Robert and Larry's great grandfather is somehow connected to Elsie Cox. So we're thinking maybe cousin, I think, or so. So Larry, did you want to chime in a little bit too on this discovery and what?
I just want to go back to the sort of shock for me, at least two shocks. I mean, one is it never would have occurred to me in a million years that we had African-American DNA or African DNA.
Right.
And we found out we do not a lot, not as much as we might have liked, but we have some. But it never would have occurred to me to find my great grandfather identified as mulatto. In other places, he's identified. In other senses, he's identified as white. Sometimes he's identified as colored. One place, he's identified as black. So we don't even know how they identified themselves. But they're all the him and his brothers are living with the Skeens. Now, we know a little bit about the Skeens, which is another incredible story. I mean, they were so-called free blacks from North Carolina, but they fled North Carolina. Their daughter, when she was something like six, Marva can correct me, had been kidnapped by slavers and taken away, and they fled then North Carolina. She, after the Civil War, came back and lived with them in Ohio, in Limaville. And there they were living with them, working on their farm, which was a very prosperous farm, not modest, but prosperous. They all joined the army, the Union Army. They were living with a guy named Luther Hughes, which was a person of color who joined the colored troops in at the same time. And they were all living together. And as Robert can explain, they don't have time to go through them all, but not only was my great-grandfather married in a black church, but the person who was a witness was a leading abolitionist in Ohio. I mean, they had ties. You would think, this is incredible. This is a guy who was plugged in, and his brothers were plugged in. And of course, later his brother married a person of color. So we have all of these wonderful relatives who assumed that Fred, my uncle, my great-grandfather, was colored and black. And so it's just an incredible story, and I just never would have believed it. But and it's still a mystery to us how we might be related not only to your line, but to the Skeens.
Right.
Their granddaughter was married to somebody named Thomas Cox. She was also in Texas, born in Texas. And they were all came together to join the farm. And she later, I'm sorry, I'm going on too long. This is what happens. My wife.
No.
And say, shut up, Larry, you're going on too much. But she, married a guy named Parker Hare, who was one of the first patrolmen of color in Cleveland, Ohio. And my great grandfather named his son, who's my grandfather, after Parker Hare. So his name is William Hare. So they were not just casually, oh, we stayed for a few weeks with the Skeens. I mean, there was a real relationship and a real friendship. This is pre-Civil War and then after Civil War. So to me, it's, I just couldn't believe it. I wouldn't, if someone had told me this, I would have said, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, here, let me add just a couple more interesting facts on that one.
Yeah.
So Dan Skeen, his son, Riley Skeen, he married a woman who was the brother, she was the sister of John Patterson Green. And I don't know if you know who John Patterson Green is, but he was the first person of African-American descent to be elected to the Ohio State Senate. And he is known as the father of Labor Day because he introduced the legislation that made Labor Day a holiday in Ohio, and it was later then adopted as a national holiday. So, I mean, we're not genetically related to him, but through marriage, we're related to him. Parker Hare, who Larry mentions, is the first African-American elected constable of this Cleveland Township and was a clerk in John Patterson Green's office.
Wow.
And so, I mean, you know, there's there's just, and the church that they went to, and the witness at our great-grandparents' wedding was the treasurer in the organization that, his name was Alan Medlin, and he helped, you know, bring Black people north into freedom before the Civil War. And then after the Civil War, he was the treasurer of an organization associated with the Freedmen's Bureau that helped, you know, helped newly freed slaves, you know, become accustomed and prosper in the post-Civil War era. So to me, it's absolutely amazing. You know, Larry talks about Parker Hare. You know, his son was one of the first Black people in Cleveland to be admitted to West Point. And grandson was a important developer of the town of Lyndhurst, Ohio. And in fact, there are two streets in Lyndhurst named Commodore Road and Edgefield Road that are Parker's wife and our great-grandfather, that we believe these streets were named after them because the developer was Parker Hare's grandson.
Oh my!
And the funny thing about that is that, you know, I mean, I grew up in Cleveland. I spent so many years there. I remember driving down Mayfield Road once and looking and seeing this street says Commodore Road. Okay. And I said, and I went back and I went to see my dad that weekend. And I said, hey, Dad, look, somebody named a road after your grandfather. Okay.
Wow.
I was joking.
And you're joking, right? Now
that it's probably true. So anyway, these are some more interesting.
Just one more amazing thing about all these stories, and both, and Robert can go on even longer than me, is
don't let him.
None of us, neither Robert nor me, before he started doing his research, had any clue about this. I mean, there were no stories in the family. Nobody ever mentioned, nobody ever said, your grandfather is named William Hare Cox after Parker Hare, who was the first patrolman of color, one of the first patrolmen of color. Not a word. And we don't know to this day if my father and didn't know, because I went to college about 2 miles from where they were all living with Daniel Skeen. And Limaville, Ohio was about 2 miles from where I went to college. My father took me there all the time. Never said, hey, you know, your great-grandfather. So one of the mysteries, and we'll get to maybe a little bit later when we talk about things still to be researched, is how did all of this rich and, in my view, wonderful knowledge about these relationships, how was it completely wiped out? Which I think is not unique to the Cox family. It happened all over. You know, Parker Hare's descendants, when you read the biography way down the line, the guy mentions his ancestry, doesn't mention that he had an African ancestor. Just
But that's where the two of you come in to, when you start looking, I always say that information, the ancestors want to be found in the historical records, and where they were hidden or just ignored, we're the ones that come along and they cry. I believe it's the spiritual. We talk about this all the time. It's spiritual that they cry out for their voices to be heard. And when we start doing this work, we are led, like we may think, oh, well, I found this, I found that. I honestly believe, yes, we do in some instances, but in others that we're led to that information. So the two of you, the three of you now are the ones that are chosen to do it. And I'm willing to bet that there's going to be an even closer connection to the gentleman that we know, Ethan West in Ohio, that's doing this work, and his family comes from North Carolina. I'm 100% sure there's going to be a connection. I'm willing to bet on that.
Listen, Janice, I'm sure you're our cousin also.
Listen, Chair Connor will tell you.
We're all brothers and sisters, but we're all cousins for sure.
Chair Connor will tell you on the back end, and we're not even going to start this.
Already.
Because she teases me and says, you're related to along with everybody else, but I do have Cox in my line, out of North Carolina, out of some of the same counties. Spencer Cox fought in the Civil War, the Falk family, if you ever see that name, F-A-U-L-K. And I've already been cheating a little bit and looking, but I'm going to hold off because I don't want to get on podcast punishment.
We have to add Tania in that too. Tania Kuhn, because she's got Cox lines too. Yeah,
exactly. So the whole thing is that, you know, I believe we are all more closely connected sometimes than we think. And people were separated or they moved, and you know, this work, it's, again, it's a calling, and you just never know. And Chair Connor can attest to it. I cannot tell you the number of people that I've either met at a conference or just in conversation and finding out that we're connected. And Cherokon and I, like I said earlier, we are connected just a little bit, but who knows? It might even be more. So I'll stop there.
No.
So we want to move forward with our next question. How has this discovery impacted or shifted your respective views on race or how you see yourselves, if at all? And you've touched on that a little bit. And I think that to add to it, I know for me, I have African-American, I have Native American, and I have European. So, and so what that does is it forces me, or it just, there's this pull to, I have to embrace all of my history. I need to research all of my history. So we're building on a foundation of truth.
Right.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's also this whole experience, and it's been, I think the spiritual dimension you can't overstate, and it's been really more than just learning. It's been really a kind of spiritual experience. And to me, it gives tremendous hope to me because I've known for a long time in the readings I've done and learning from Martin Luther King, who taught that the biggest obstacle to making positive social change in this country to build a better America has been the way that racism has been used to divide people rather than bring them together, used to divide especially poor and working class whites from even more oppressed people of color and get them pitted against each other rather than coming together. And the fact that I have discovered a story of a struggling Black family that fled slavery from North Carolina to come to Ohio and then rescued it, because I believe they rescued my teenage great-grandfather and his younger brothers, because these people were a handful to take care of, as we know from our research, and gave them work, gave them a home, and forged lifelong friendships and relationships, whatever their biological relations, they were very, very close. If that could happen then, and it could happen in my family, where I thought there was no hope of this at all my life, then I think it can happen now again, even at a time when people are still trying to use race to divide people and keep us apart. So that's, you asked what's the impact on. To me, it's that I feel this is a story, and I just feel like I have to keep learning more about it and sharing it, because just like the work you're all doing, you're sharing these stories. I think it's incredibly important for bringing us all together.
But look at your history and what you've already been doing, and then to discover this information, to me,
in a way, it was aligned.
Thank you, Cherokon. I was struggling, like, what is it? Because I'm really feeling this right now. It was meant to be. It was just meant to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I would add that, you know, I mean, like, for me, you know, I've always been interested in history, but genealogy puts a personal twist on it.
Yes.
I mean, if you can go and you can look at where your ancestors and relatives were at a particular point in time, you know, then, I mean, you know, it really takes the facts and what they struggled through and brings it home and gives us lessons for us today. And, you know, one of the most, and I've made some really beautiful and valuable friendships from the distant relatives that I've met. And one of those I want to mention is Franklin Cook. He is a grandson or great grandson actually of Fred Cox, who was our great grandfather's brother. He's also a person who did a lot of genealogy research in the family. And I mean, when he found that, you know, I was also on the trail of trying to figure out where the Coxes came from, you know, I mean, he would call me up on the phone every few weeks, okay, and ask me how much progress I'd made. He'd tell me about the things that he had researched. He would, I mean, one of the things that we're also looking at besides the DNA is like name research, because, you know, these names like Perry and Clinton are unusual first names, and yet we can connect them to other people in North Carolina who are Coxes, and so we believe there's a connection there. But, you know, I mean, there have been times when I've said to Franklin, I said, are you sure you want to be on this journey? Because, you know, as we go back, we might find some terrible things that we'd rather not know. And I know so many times, you know, the first book I read on Black genealogy, it talked about you know, how it's difficult to try to discover your family history, because, you know, the older relatives will say, oh, don't you mind about that. You don't want to know about that. That's just the terrible past. Forget about it and move forward. But I mean, I really feel that unless we can go back and put ourselves in that position and try to understand and feel what went on at those times, we haven't really lived through, and we've missed out on an opportunity to redeem the legacy of those terrible years and what happened. So I want to encourage, I mean, Larry and I have run up, you know, against, we've reached out to a lot of different people who we know are descendants of Parker and Edgefield Air, mm-hmm. and of Perry and Clinton Cox from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it sounded like they were interested in talking to us, and then they got just kind of shut down and didn't bother to contact us. So I want to encourage anybody who's reluctant or just thinks that they don't want to open up the past, you know, have the faith to get beyond that and understand that what you're finding could be so valuable, not just for you and your understanding the past, but for future generations to learn from. So those people we've been contacting, if you run across this podcast, here's your chance. We are real. We're not scammers. We just want to know our family history, your family history, and share it with you.
Oh, wow.
If we were in church, we would go, you better preach.
That's right. Yes. I like that. Have the faith to get beyond that.
You know, in our family, we always thought Larry was going to become a Methodist minister. At least my dad thought so.
Yes, I was on my way, but I got diverted by the 1960s. anyway, I just wanted to say the other advice if I would have to people who are listening to this is don't wait 50 years like I did. To start to get involved in genealogy. I can't tell you how much I regret not having had the chance to talk to my father and even if I'd started young enough, I could have even talked to my grandfather to ask this key question, like, what did you know? Didn't you know about this?
Right.
Why are you pretending like, you know, Black people have nothing to do with us, you know, because
Who are we really?
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And I would have loved to have that conversation. I avoided the conversation because I thought this is what Robert was saying. I thought it would be unpleasant. I thought it would cause conflict, and I didn't want to do that. But now if I could go back and say, hey, let's talk, and I can even show you where they all live, you know?
Right.
Great. So don't wait. Do it when you're young, as young as Janice and Chiricana.
Yeah.
Or younger. We have a colleague.
Yeah, you may not think you're young, but to us,
we had a friend that started. He's been doing this for a while. And I said, well, how long have you been doing this? And he said, since the seventh grade.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just stood there looking at him like, what? Since the seventh grade. Powerful information he has discovered as well.
Yeah, that's great advice, though. That's great advice. And, you know, I do want to touch on before we get to the next question, just If you're able to kind of just share some tips too on research, because a lot of our listeners are also just, you know, general, you know, genealogists, they like to do this research. What are some things, resources that you found helpful? I know you mentioned the name research, looking at names and how that has been helpful. You mentioned Texas and their genealogical institute. Just curious if you have, you know, just kind of general advice, also like research advice that you can offer our listeners.
Wow. Go ahead, Robert. You're the one.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, like I said, in this part of things, I mean, DNA is probably the best way to try mm-hmm. to get, you know, some kind of basic information to work on. I mean, you know, a big problem with a lot of courthouses. I mean, a lot of records were kept in courthouses. And we know that in 1870, you know, the Lenoir County courthouse burned. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, the majority of the records are all lost. But, you know, it doesn't mean that everything is quite lost. I mean, you know, just recently they found the index to, you know, some of the court records in Lenoir County. And, you know, even there, I mean, you know, grab for whatever piece of information you can. What we did find in there is that there was a guy called Peregrine Cox, and we believe he might have been our great-grandfather's grandfather. And, you know, but he's only listed in there twice. One was for a land transfer record, okay? But the other one was arrested for drunk and disorderly. And I'll tell you, you know, that we've had a little bit of a drinking problem for some
generations. There's always a few. There's always a few.
You look at it and you say, hey, it fits.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, so I have a moonshiner.
Yeah.
I thought he was a professional alcohol salesman, and he was a moonshiner.
We also had a lot of interesting luck with, newspaper stories. Both in, in Ohio, where we got all kinds of information in little bits and drabs about our great-grandfather and his brothers, who often made the newspapers not for the best of reasons. We thought there'd be nothing about them, and we found out they were often mentioned in the police blotter because they were arrested all the time for beating people up or getting beat up. But nonetheless, there'd be information in there about including some that identified him again as a colored gentleman rather than as a white gentleman. So it's interesting. And the same thing with Daniel Skeen. Just by the internet, just by accident, we found the newspaper in 1848 in Raleigh saying that he had applied for manumission of his wife and daughter, who were apparently still enslaved, and he was trying to get them out. And we know that happened, and we know they had to get it published in the newspaper. So I think newspapers are, but very, very, it's been very important for us. I think at some point we're all, you'll come with us, Chiricana, and you'll come with us, and we'll all go to North Carolina, because I think we got to sort of nose around.
I think so.
I mean, even Limaville was an astounding place. I mean, you know, Larry, you know, because he went to school in Alliance, made a connection with the woman who was the head of the genealogical society there. And, you know, she was able to go through the old Limaville newspapers, and you find all these cute tidbits about, you know, that they would just kind of be like a gossip column. But, you know, our great grandfather would show up in there, and it would talk about, like, he sold his horse and it died, or he went to a Methodist revival and he left his hat there, bought a new one, and now he owns two hats. And about how he contracted with somebody, you know, to take him to three different cities on a trip, and then he found out the man was drunk and didn't pay him. You know, just little stories like that give you a sense of the color of people's lives, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
it brings them from just the census record into who they are as people. And the other thing, of course, is that, you know, if you have, you know, any like Civil War records or whatever, these are gold, because, I mean, you know, they will tell you, you know, more details about a person than you'll meet in any other records.
Yeah. We actually just had a guest on who was works at the Civil War Museum. She's actually the first relative I had on. That was Dr. Dawn Chitty. But the conversation wasn't about, you know, our relationship. But the Civil War, I mean, it's chock full of information. It's a gold mine. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually working on another ancestor trying to get his Civil War pension record. And I'm just, you know, getting the runaround. But, you know, to your point, it really does. It gives a great narrative. It can give you names, parents, places, and so forth. So I appreciate that. Thank you, though. That was great advice. So as you both shared with me, and as you shared on this podcast, there's a lot of puzzling, strange details about Commodore Perry Cox's life and, you know, his siblings and many unanswered questions. Can you clarify for the audience, like, what are some of those unanswered questions and what's next for both of you in the research journey?
Well, go ahead, Robert. You're probably
okay. Better. I mean, I'll just say this. I mean, the biggest mystery is, you know, we know that Commodore Perry Cox and his two brothers were born in Robertson County, Texas in the 1840s.
Right.
But we don't know. And we know his parents were from North Carolina. We believe it's like Lenoir County or around there. We don't know how or why they went from Texas to North Carolina. And then we don't know. We know that the brothers ended up in Ohio around 1855, but we don't know why. Okay.
Right.
And so those are the two biggest mysteries.
You mean how they got from North Carolina to Texas?
What's that?
How they got from North Carolina to Texas.
Yeah, we don't know that. And we don't know. And we don't know.
Somewhere their parents disappeared totally.
Yeah. Even Daniel Skeens, I mean, what we know is that Edgefield Cox, we think that, you know, she was a younger girl that's in that same census. Okay. And we believe that she's actually a cousin rather than a sister, even though she's listed as a sister in one of the newspaper articles, because he says in his Civil War pension application that he's known her since 1855, but she was born in 1848. So if she's really her sister, I guess, why is it that he didn't know her till she was 7 years old? So, I mean, it says that she was born in Galveston. And so, I mean, you know, and they're born in Robertson County. So it seems like they're children from two different brothers that ended up somehow making their way north to Ohio into the Skeen household. But we know that Edgefield Cox's grandfather is Daniel Skeen. But we haven't found a DNA connection to any of, you know, in Commodore Perry's or Fred's family to the Skeens. So
I think it's coming.
I do too.
So anyway, these are the mysteries.
Granis was saying about, you know, the ancestors. And I know when I used to do work in Africa, there was also a very strong sense of this, you know, about the ancestors reaching out, you know, meeting you and guiding you. And I felt that when we were in Limaville with the Skeens, I felt like they were, you know, we were at where we know they're buried there. And it just felt very real that we were connected. I would love to put up a monument to them, because there's no marking on their grave. I feel like we owe them, because I think they really did an enormous service to our side of the family. And I feel like if we keep this up, you know, you know what it's like, you because you hit these brick walls.
And
you think, now it's over. And then just when you think it's over, we find you, and Maddie White, who is your cousin, I think, and that takes us to, and what's the relationship? One of the key questions, what's the relationship between those Coxes and the Skeens? Is there any connection between them? They're all in North Carolina. They're all in this relatively small space. You know, we think, how do you pronounce her? You call her Alcee, or you call her Elsie?
Alcee.
I think we think she was probably, she was born in 1849, I think. I think she's probably enslaved. You know, we don't know what the relationship is between all of these different people.
Well, and as you know, I told both of you, Alcee was my brick wall for the Cox line. Like I couldn't get past her. So I just knew it was her. And then she married William Bryant Becton. And then you both came along and, you know, helped really, you know, shoot down some brick walls for me. So hopefully together we can start to piece this very interesting story. And so basically with these, the brothers is, you know, to kind of wrap it up, you have this North Carolina connection. You've got these young men, teenagers, older teenagers, it sounds like. They're from Ohio, but there's a Texas connection. And their parents are from Texas, but the parents disappear.
We think are from North Carolina.
From North Carolina. They end up in Texas. You're not sure why. And then they move to Ohio with the Skeens, and we're trying to figure out what that connection is about.
Exactly.
Okay.
I would say look at what their occupations were. And the reason that I say that is because I have an ancestor that was in South Carolina, and then he left South Carolina, went to Georgia, then he left Georgia and went to Florida. And the reason, we figured out the reason, he was in the he knew how to cultivate, or he worked turpentine. And so when it dried up in South Carolina, he went to Georgia. When it dried up in Georgia, he went to Florida. So just kind of see what was going on at the time. You know, all love history. So you look at the timeline, okay, what was going on at that particular time in that location? And then look in the census records to see, were there other people that left one place, went to the same place, and what were they doing? So that's why they tell you, look 10 pages back, backwards, 10 pages forward, see if some of the people, I've noticed that people were coming from the same area, moving along. Another example is, I didn't understand why I had a lot of family that lived in and moved from South Carolina to Florida. And so someone said, oh, it's that simple. In the wintertime, they worked in Florida, in the orange groves and all. And then winter was over, they came back to South Carolina. And then some of them said, you know what? We're tired of going back and forth. We're just going to stay in Florida. So to me, looking at occupations,
right?
And then are there other people that were from the same area going? And then in most cases, when somebody goes to another place that's so far away like that, they know someone. Who was living there? So I love this story. I know that there's going to be more. And I'm so excited for Terracotta. I'm excited for the two of you. And Terracotta, I told you, you're like, I never find anything. I said, it's coming. And lately it's been coming and coming. Yes. So last thing I wanted to share to all three of you is DNA is very, very powerful. And so you are your ancestors. They're in you. And so I believe that that is, when I say spiritual, I don't mean it to be anything spooky spiritual. It's just that their DNA is in you and it's calling out and it's leading and guiding you to the people that you need to connect with. And the document and the story unfolding is coming as well. So I'm excited about what that's going to turn out to be.
Awesome. Great advice. Good tip, Janice. Yeah.
Okay. So please share with our listeners any parting words. And Terracotta, that includes you.
Okay. I'll go last. Please, Larry and Robert first.
I'll defer to Larry first.
Okay.
Well, I'm deeply moved by this whole experience. I think, you know, people sometimes ask, why are you so obsessed about your ancestor? Why do people do this? You know, and I was in that camp, as I said. I mean, if Robert had asked me 30 years ago or 20 years ago, I would have said, why? I'm not going to look back. I'm going forward. And I think it's just what Janice just said. My parting word is that back is forward. I mean, you know, you go back to find your roots so you can grow a bigger, you know, tree or whatever you're talking about and move forward. And as I said before, to me, this whole experience has been an incredible, hopeful one, where we are finding and we are making connections and we're building on what our ancestors have already done. So I'm very moved and grateful. It fits in perfectly well with what I've devoted my life to in terms of trying to advance racial justice and equality.
Robert?
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, I was involved in a political issue here in the city of Mountain View. And one of my coworkers gave me a stone, and on the stone was inscribed, "Never give up." And to me, that's the kind of motto that you should have when you have, when you're going and working on the genealogy, because there's always the chance and always the opportunity to find out something new and learn something more. I mean, you know, I thought years ago that I would never make any more progress from the day that I picked up the Black genealogy book, you know, over in Cleveland. But, you know, it was kind of a strange thing. I was thinking about this. Larry and I had connected together after not seeing each other for many, many years. And it's kind of like you say, there's a spiritual connection in it. And my father died at the age of 74. And I know that I knew Larry had spent his whole life working, you know, for oppressed people and human rights. And I had never shared this story with anybody else in our family, except maybe my brother, but a sister of mine and a few other close relatives. And then I said to myself, you know, if Larry turns 75, I'm going to take that as a spiritual sign, okay, from God, that he's past my father's age. And so it's a sign that I need to share this information with him and see where it goes. And wouldn't you know it, the night before I'd had a dream of my ancestors in the back room calling out to me and saying, tell our story. And so I called Larry up and I told him, honestly, he was floored. But, you know, the real thing that was so exciting about it was not just that, you know, he welcomed the information, but that he was willing to be a co-worker with me on it. And that's the thing that spurred us on together. It's when you have partners in the research that make it, you know, the beautiful thing to do. So those are my parting thoughts.
And Terracana.
I think that ties in nicely with what I'm thinking as well. And it's something that Janice, you're always saying, is to collaborate and share. I feel like the theme with this has been, you know, teamwork, partnership, you know, collaboration, and just being open and willing to share what you know. And sometimes it, you know, with genealogy and with social media, everyone, you know, we're trying to be careful and you know, there's precautions that need to take place, of course, but, you know, you can rob yourself of, you know, all kinds of wonderful experiences if you don't, you know, be willing to open up and share stuff. And I think that this has really been, it's going to be a fun project. I'm looking forward to where this is going to go. And like you said, collaborate, share, and just be willing to be part of the team when it comes to genealogy research, for sure. I hope that wasn't too wordy. Well, Robert and Larry, thank you so much for sharing with us. Thank you for sharing with me. And thank you for reaching out to me, because if you didn't do that, we wouldn't be here. And so I thank you for doing that. Thank you for being open and interested in the story, willing to share the story with us and our listeners. Do you have any websites or social media pages where listeners can find you that you would like to share with them?
I don't
be shy.
Well, anybody can email me at all one word, robertcoxfrommountainview@gmail.com. And if you got any leads, especially if you're related to those people I said, I'm waiting to hear from you.
All right. Perfect. So to our listeners.
Add one more thing, Terracotta. I hope you and Janice are also writing your own stories down.
Oh, absolutely.
Somebody's ancestor, you know, someday. Yeah. And if our ancestors had only written something down,
exactly,
our work would be so much easier. And, you know, we should all be writing our biographies for our future, you know, descendants.
That's right.
Working on it in progress.
Kanika Marshall, she says it. It's not a goal. It's a mandate to share these stories. So you're right on the money with that, for sure. Well, to our listeners, we thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you.